It's Charlotte Talks. I'm Julie Rose, in for Mike Collins. Eastland Mall was the largest mall in the state when it opened in 1975. It was iconic. And now it's vacant and set for demolition. So Eastland Mall has become sort of a symbol of the decline of Charlotte's East Side. The East Side is by no means vacant, but it's also not the thriving center of commerce and community it once was. The conversion of East Independence Boulevard into a highway left whole stretches of shops and restaurants virtually inaccessible and now deserted. Crime is up. More people were robbed in the Eastway division last year than anywhere else in the city. East Side schools don't score as well as those in South Charlotte, for example. But many people love living on the East Side for its diversity and its amazing range of international food options. Big plans for change are afoot. A streetcar, movie studios. Is that really what the East Side needs? We're delving into the East Side's complex and evolving identity today with Charlotte Mayor Patsy Kinsey and Councilman Billy Madelon, who was recently appointed as an interim replacement for Mayor Kinsey, representing District 1 on the City Council. So welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilman Madelon, you're also part of the Eastland Area Strategies team, which we'll talk about more during this conversation. Also with us is Diane Langevin, president of the Winterfield Neighborhood Association since 2000, member of Charlotte East Community Partners and the Streetcar Advisory Committee. Welcome, Diane.
Thank you.
And Noah Mizgani, an East Side resident, a new East Side resident, and owner of Queen Sheba Ethiopian Restaurant, which is participating in Taste of the World coming up in about a month. So welcome, Mr. Mizgani.
Thank you.
So let's wind back the clock for the first part of this conversation to talk a little bit about what the East Side used to be like. Mayor Kinsey, you grew up in Charlotte. What do you remember?
I did. I grew up at 1327 Central Avenue. We lived with our grandparents. I went to Midwood Elementary, walked to school, Piedmont Junior High, walked to school, and Central High School. I remember when Central Avenue was a two-lane street. It was busy because it was the main thoroughfare out east. I remember when Eastway Drive was the city limits. And of course, the commercial area right there on Central Avenue was thriving, and still is, for that matter.
This is the Central Plaza intersection area through there?
Yes. Actually, from about Pecan to the plaza.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of shops on either side, and then back toward Commonwealth. But I remember all of those things. I like to laugh and say my daddy used to go drink beer at the Penguin because he couldn't drink it at home. So,
so what did people go to the East Side for then? Was it for the bars? I mean, what
oh
was
heavens,
out there?
No. It was a wonderful neighborhood to live in, Plaza Midwood area. I remember I rode the buses uptown to my piano lessons, and I could ride. Yeah, let's say it was 210 and 14 buses that went right by my house. I had easy transportation anywhere, just about anywhere in Charlotte. Of course, you had to go uptown first, but I think people moved out there because wonderful homes, nice neighborhoods,
So it was
it's just access to a lot of things.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, it was residential.
It was really considered a residential,
yes.
Not necessarily a commercial center then?
No, just that little one on Central Avenue was the only one that we had at that time when I was growing up.
Councilman Madelon, you grew up out in that area too. So when you were growing up, what were people coming to the East Side for, and what did you identify with?
Well, by the time I come along, Eastland Mall has just happened, and Eastland is obviously a huge attraction. People are coming from all over the city to go to Eastland, and Central Avenue was the main thoroughfare by which they went there. And so, as Mayor Kinsey points out, it goes from a two-lane road to a four-lane road very quickly because it's the way east, and commerce followed. We had Liquor by the Drink that came in, I think, 76, which changed Charlotte, and particularly on the east side. I remember when we got some major national restaurants right off of Albemarle Road, Steak and Ale, Boar's Head, Victoria Station. That was the place to go and shag and dance, and if you wanted to have a really great steak. So East Charlotte, when I was a child, was the place to be.
Okay. Not to age you, but how? What?
46 years old. So I was born in 67. So we're talking, my childhood was mostly the 70s and 80s. And East Charlotte was as hot as a $2 pistol.
All right. So, Diane, you said you've owned your home there for 30 some odd years?
25 years.
25 years. What made you decide to be a homeowner in East Charlotte? It was during the peak when you actually decided to invest there.
Well, my parents moved down here in 62. We lived off Monroe Road, and the city limits was right at the cemetery at Monroe Road and Sharon Amity. So I've always lived in East Charlotte, and I got apartments in East Charlotte, and it was just a nice neighborhood. There's the Winfield Elementary School. My nephews nieces went to school there. The homes are well built. We just celebrated our 50th anniversary of the neighborhood.
And your neighborhood is actually kind of kitty corner to Eastland Mall.
Quite kitty corner. We can walk straight to Eastland Mall.
Across Central.
It's right off Central. It's just a wonderful neighborhood. We are located to all the major highways.
Yeah.
And we have the best eating places. I get disturbed when people say, oh, there's no place to eat in East Charlotte. My goodness, you could go eat out every day for 2 months and not eat at the same restaurant. Mm. You just have to be adventurous and be willing to try new cuisines. And I love to travel. So I've tried cuisines in different parts of the world. So I have it right here at home.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely some of the best international selection over
definitely.
In Charlotte. But so Diane, what happened to your neighborhood, your home value, when Eastland Mall started to deteriorate?
The values went down, but our taxes went up, and that was very disturbing. We even appealed to it. But we're a very transient neighborhood to a certain extent because we have homes, we have duplexes, we have apartments and rental property. We're working very hard to get everybody involved in the neighborhood, whether they're renters or owners. But we have a very old population in our neighborhood, original homeowners for 50 years. They're in their 80s right now. So we may have maybe four left of the original homeowners in the neighborhood. And yesterday we had a cookout. We reminisced about who lived where, and a lot of them lived at the duplexes at the end of the neighborhood while their houses were being built. And one woman and her husband are living in what was the model apartment for the Winterfield neighborhood. They're well-built houses. We have a community garden. We have a great elementary school, neighborhood school with a wonderful principal there. So we're more of a community right now than a neighborhood association.
Yeah, but you also have these aging homeowners, original homeowners who at some point will pass on.
Yes.
And then I guess the challenge for you is how to get new families who want to come and really put down roots there. And what does the community have to offer today? I mean, you've talked about the restaurants, and you've talked about the well-built homes and the nice little sense of community. But, I mean, it's hard to deny that if you look across the street to Eastland Mall, there's a big question mark about what's going to happen there. And the rest of the area, I mean, it's no longer the place to go. How does a two?
Hotter than a $2 pistol.
$2 it was.
I don't even know what that means, but I assume it means really hip and happening. You know, what do you have? Like, what's your selling pitch to new people that you want to come in and put down roots there?
Well-built homes. We're centrally located to come uptown, Albemarle Road, 77.
Established yards.
Oh, very well established.
I mean, you go in there, you've got nice trees and shrubbery, and it's
well, not sidewalks. We're having all new sidewalks.
And large lots, too.
Oh, rather large lots.
Compared to what you can get now. Mm.
They're older homes, well-built homes. I've had little repairs to do in my home, and the lots are large enough that you can add on. Yeah. I added on 420 square feet to my house, plus a huge patio. And I still have a lot of yard that I have to hire somebody to mow my yard.
Yeah.
So they're well-established, well-built, good schools, wonderful people. And there's just a lot in East Charlotte people don't realize.
Mayor Kinsey, what was the turning point, do you think? When did you, as an East Charlotte resident, realize, we need to start thinking about where we're going with this part of town?
Well, I'm not really sure I can pinpoint when that happened. I think when the Eastland Mall started to decline just a little bit, that probably was sort of the edge of when it started.
Why did it decline? Why did Eastland Mall?
Well, I think it had competition. South Park was built, and then later on, Concord Mills. So it was had competition, and then there was a talk. I remember there was talk about a new large mall out in the Mint Hill area, and that's what prompted some of the larger anchor tenants at Eastland to close. They were planning to go out further east.
Well, another thing, I went to a meeting, and the demographics are changing on mall constructions. If you look at your mall constructions, they're off interstates.
Yeah.
And Eastland was in a center of a town.
Yeah, yeah.
Then North Lake opened off of 77. Yeah. South Park is just overbuilt. I mean, you almost do not see the shopping center itself. It's just condos and more shops. But that was part, I think, of why Eastland went down, because everything was changing.
And what about Independence Boulevard? What was the talk to me about sort of what that has done, kind of where that came from. It was like central, right? Like a mm-hmm. two-lane road type thing that turned into a four-lane?
It was residential at one point. I used to babysit on houses. That's how I worked my way through college way back when babysitting, and you weren't making a lot of money. But Independence was residential.
Wow.
And
well,
people can't believe
it. Split a neighborhood.
Oh,
it split
did.
The Chantilly neighborhood.
And it was
so how
narrow.
Problematic was it then to have Independence become more and more of a thoroughfare to where we have now? At least the first stretch of it is a freeway. I mean, you can't really get off.
You know, Independence has been a disaster.
From the get-go.
Yeah. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, you had the Krispy Kreme, and you had light after light after light after light, and that's how Chantilly, as Mayor Kinsey rightly points out, it split right down through the middle, and there were lots of concessions that were made that were probably fatal flaws in the beginning on the design of Independence. And then so Independence becomes a 30-year construction project that's not even close to finish today. And it doesn't help the east side at all because, of course, I went to school at Our Lady of Assumption right there in Chantilly, right across from the KFC. Of course, all that's gone now, and it's a thoroughfare through there. But you know, there was nothing that was hugely positive that was taking place, mostly because at that point, you know, we are completely a car-driven community. And you wouldn't dare have walked out anywhere close to Independence Boulevard at that time and if you tried to cross it on foot, you would have gotten killed. Mm. I can remember as a child, we would go up every Wednesday because that's when they changed the mannequins at the Bootery and Bloomery. The little underwear shop there on the corner, and as a young kid, I kind of got a kick out of that. And you know, Wednesdays we'd go up and see what the newest wares were in the Bootery and Bloomery window, and we'd almost get killed. So you knew I must have liked it because I took my life in my hands to get over there. And those days are gone, but I mean, you know, you get the sense that Eastland didn't decline on its own. It was part of a larger, complex set of things. We had changing demographics. You had, as Mayor Kinsey points out, South Park Mall, which when I was a kid was hard to get to. Mm. And then they, you know, Wendover cuts all the way through and Carmel Road sort of happens. And so all of a sudden you can get to South Park Mall. And it was new and shiny. And Eastland was sort of the first-generation mall in Charlotte. Mm. And so Eastland largely had happened to it, I think, what happened to Ivy's and Belk's uptown, which was it just sort of became a generational thing. It got a little bit older, and then you had some other high-profile crime issues that happened out there. And then, you know, it doesn't take a lot more than that for parents to not want their kids to be out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we were kids, we'd go out on Central Avenue and catch the bus. And the bus would just take us all the way to Eastland Mall. And at the end of the night, when the mall closed, we'd get back on the bus and ride back home.
We're talking East Side Charlotte. We have to take a quick break. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Wells Fargo, presenting What You Didn't Learn in High School History. Art collector Bernard Kinsey shares untold stories of African American history. Moderated by Mike Collins, September 9th, Night Theater. Tickets at GantCenter.org. Coming up tomorrow on Charlotte Talks, we all know that the world is a giant ecosystem and that we're all interconnected with plants and animals in the food chain. Perhaps the most important connection between man and animals is pollination. Many of our major crops rely on pollinators to help crop species thrive. Bees play a crucial role in the pollination process, but they're disappearing in alarming numbers. Our panel of experts will explain the pollination process and help solve the mystery of why honeybees are disappearing. That's when Charlotte Talks, tomorrow at 9, here on 90.7 WFAE.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the U.S. and international response to reports of chemical weapons use in Syria, the latest on the Syrian crisis.
That's the topic on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. I'm Julie Rose in for Mike Collins. We're talking about Charlotte's East Side today with Charlotte Mayor Patsy Kinsey, Councilwoman Billy Madelon, Diane Langevin of the Winterfield neighborhood, and also Noah Mizgani of Queen Sheba Ethiopian restaurant. Did I get that right? I think I didn't, almost. You can join the conversation too. We'd love to know what you think about where the East Side has come from and where it's going and what you think needs to be the next chapter in this neighborhood, this whole region of Charlotte. You can join the conversation, 704-926-9323. Give us a ring or email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. We're on Twitter at Charlotte Talks. So, Noah Mizgani, you are new to the East Side. You both live and operate a restaurant in Charlotte's East Side, and you came here in 2011. Tell me why you made that decision as opposed to all the other areas you could go.
Thank you, Julie. The reason we came from Miami Beach to Charlotte was just to join Northwestern Mutual as a financial advisor. Then I saw this nice restaurant very close to downtown, and I see a lot of opportunities closer to downtown and just so many close by. You could walk and you could eat so many different ethnic food. So we said this is the place to be.
Mm. Did crime concern you?
Well, since I've been there, I didn't see any big issue that concerns me. So.
Mm. And your customers, do you struggle to get people to be willing to venture out? I mean, first of all, venturing out to an Ethiopian restaurant is a big deal for some people. But even just getting them also to come to the East Side to your restaurant.
Well, there is assumption. I mean, I work with people, and they tell me this is not a good area. But since I've been there, I didn't see any bad things. And the assumption is just this side is not a place to be, but it's a great place to be.
Mm.
I think people should come and see it themselves and just enjoy the richness of the area.
Yeah. So, I mean, their perception is always a challenge. But what is the perception that you're fighting against, Diane, as you try to get your neighborhood, Winterfield, stable and improving?
It's the media. Whenever I'm interviewed,
darn media.
Well, it's always East Charlotte. We did have a shooting. We have this bar in our neighborhood that police have been working with. We cannot get rid of it because it's been grandfathered in, and it's almost right across the street from a residential place.
Mm-hmm.
But the police work very, very well with us. Our neighborhood, when we have our neighborhood meeting and we have a crime watch session, it's not the neighborhoods that have crime. It's more on the corridors. Mm-hmm. It's the perception, the newspaper, East Charlotte, they need to be less directional in where they give where crime occurs. So I try to be very careful and be very positive what I say about the area. But people only see the corridors. They need to go down the side street, go down Progress Lane. It is almost like being on Queens Road.
Mm.
Big lots, huge trees. And the Islamic Center down Progress Lane have a lot of open houses to invite the neighborhoods to join with them. And they're very interesting. We celebrate with them with their foods and learn more about their religion. So they're open to the neighborhood, but I think people need to get off of Albemarle Road, Central Avenue, go into the neighborhoods. They're beautiful, beautiful neighborhoods, safe neighborhoods. Then very little crime in the neighborhoods. We watch out for each other, and the police, the Eastway Police Department, are excellent.
And what about the schools? Noah, do you have children?
No.
Okay. Okay, so schools were not a consideration for you when you decided where to move into, right?
Well, I am very optimistic guy, and I'm hoping that this, the East Side will be a better place and just a place where parents could raise their kids. You know, it's very... I had the privilege seeing the place with Louis. I mean, there are so many lakes around this area. I mean, so many beautiful things. I mean, if they fix the mall issue, I think that will be the next Noda area, I think.
Mm-hmm. The next Noda. Yeah. One thing that's interesting about East Side is that it's pretty big geographically. So, you know, there are lots of neighborhoods that fit into it. And some of them, I mean, Plaza Midwood and Elizabeth are some of the more expensive places you can live in town. Some of the highest property values, some of the highest education levels. But then you have some other neighborhoods where it's completely the opposite in East Side as well, where there's a much higher percentage of – I was looking through the census, you know, census information, and it's amazing, you know, the difference between various neighborhoods within the East Side. Some of them have really high percentages of people on food stamps and graduation rate concerns and that kind of thing. So how do we create, Mayor, I guess, when you're looking at the entire East Side and wanting to make policy decisions for the East Side, how do you as a councilwoman and as a mayor, how do you make decisions knowing that maybe Plaza Midwood doesn't need that much help, but then you've got other neighborhoods in the area that do need a lot of help? Like, how do you decide what to do, what's going to benefit everybody over there?
Well, you look at the areas that do need it, and you try to accommodate their needs. I have the good fortune of not only being raised in District 1 or the East Side, but also representing or having been elected from District 1 for the past 10 years. So I know all the neighborhoods very well. I go to all the neighborhood meetings. And I think that's what makes the whole area interesting, is because of the diversity. We do have the highest rate the most number of subsidized units in Charlotte. District 1 has that. So that's primarily the East Side. But we have to look and see what the various neighborhoods need. That's what we're trying to do with providing curb and gutter, sidewalks, things like that that make the neighborhood just nicer. It gives a better quality of life for the residents. But we're beginning to look at the areas that really are the neediest and trying to accommodate some of their needs.
Okay, so you can put in curbs and gutters, make it safer for the kids to walk to school, to their bus stop and so forth. But is that enough to reverse the decline that Eastland Mall's deterioration brought, or Independence Boulevard? I mean, what do you think is the answer to that?
Well, we're also trying to address the Eastland situation. We've sunk.
And is a movie studio what you think would turn things around out there?
I don't know. We're doing a 6-month due diligence for that. And a lot will depend on what the state does with tax credits, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm. With the film incentive.
Film incentives. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens there. So I don't know, but we've got to do something.
Yeah.
We've got to do something.
How quickly do you think we need to do something? How much time do we have here, do you think, Mayor, Councilman Madeline?
Well, whatever we do, we have to do the right thing. It's got to be sustainable. So let's don't rush into doing something and then 2 years later, it's empty again.
And that's not what the folks on the East Side want. They don't want smoke and mirrors. We have some structural, fundamental issues that have to change. Infrastructure is permanent, and it does drive economic development. We know that. We know that's true all over the city of Charlotte. And that's
and when
why
you say infrastructure.
I'm talking about the streetcar, for example, anything that's inside of the capital improvement project, the Bojangles Coliseum redevelopment, that whole area. It's going to be amazing to watch. Well, not just to watch. Watch right now what's already happening in that area, in those neighborhoods. I mean, we keep talking about neighborhoods, you know. East Charlotte was and still is the part of the city for great communities, great neighborhoods, wonderful people living in safe neighborhoods with sidewalks and trees and wonderfully built homes. And here's the key. It's affordable. If you want to come to Charlotte, and I'm sure Noah, that was part of the formula for Noah, is affordability. Now, that's not going to be true forever if we're lucky and if we're right. If this plan rolls out the way we think it will, there'll come a time when all of East Charlotte will have symptoms of East, of Plaza Midwood and Elizabeth, because those communities haven't always been the places to be. Mm. They happen to be now, and there were some things that happened to make that possible. That prosperity will continue to go east as long as the economic development plan continues to roll east. But one thing will never change, and that's the fact that we have great neighborhoods on the east side with wonderful people living in them, and our international communities that have done infill and sort of moved in and adopted areas of East Charlotte around our more traditional communities. Mm-hmm. What a wonderful place for the artistic set, the younger professionals that are moving to Charlotte. This is exactly where they want to be. They want to walk and bike. They want to live where they work, live near where they work. I mean, this is the next frontier for Charlotte, and I'm excited to be involved with it at this time.
Let's bring a few more voices into the conversation here. First of all, an email from Jennifer, who says she's lived in Charlotte since 98, has only lived on the east side, first in Plaza Midwood, now in Windsor Park. She says they love the neighborhoods, love that they can walk to the landmark, love the diversity. She says in 15 years, we've had one problem with crime, and really our biggest problem is street litter. We tell all the newcomers in town to check out our neighborhood because you can buy a lovely older home with a great yard and not have a huge mortgage, which we've spoken of here. We wanted to be able to afford a house on one salary. So while friends who bought new and bought south and north of town have struggled, we've done okay. We have owls, birds, butterflies, and beautiful trees. But street litter, what's going on there, Diane?
We do have problems with litter. We try to do our neighborhood, do some pickups. I don't know if it's a cultural thing. And I think it is that people just throw litter out. We're working very hard with that. Mm. And another thing I want to point out with her, we have a nature preserve in our area.
Really?
90 acres behind the Evergreen Cemetery. Huh. So not only does East Charlotte have all the amenities, we have a lot of parks, neighborhood parks. I was on the Park and Rec East Side District Advisory Board for 6 years, which was a joy. So we have the nature preserve, thanks to Dr. Larry Barton and his wife. We have like 250 species of birds there. We have parks. We have the community garden. But the litter problem is something people need to take some ownership. I mean, you go to the bus stops and there's a beautiful litter box there. Where's the litter? It's on the side. It's like people are not educated to know what to do with litter. Throw it away.
Right.
And maybe a campaign, you know.
Well, but you've talked to Diane about struggling with a sense of ownership. I mean, that there is a high percentage of rental.
Exactly.
In a lot of these East Side neighborhoods. And we have someone asking, can you please give me the street boundaries of the East Side, which we were trying to do earlier. And Chris, I'm sorry, there is not an actual East Side definition, but basically east of North Tryon and north of, what did we say, Monroe Road?
Oh, I would say Randolph.
We have communities fighting to be a part of East Charlotte now, and what a nice change, right? Everybody wants to be a part of East Charlotte.
And talking about the litter, there's litter all over Charlotte. It's not just the east side, so please don't think it's just the east side. I get calls about that from all over Charlotte.
Let's take it. If you put your headphones on, we'll hear from Charles. He's been holding for a little bit here. Charles, hi. Welcome to Charlotte Talks. I understand you've lived on the east side for 52 years.
Good morning. Yes, I would just echo all the amenities and benefits that our guests and panelists have talked about. The east side has a lot to offer. I will say, I was around when Eastland Mall was built. It was a destination at that point, and I've watched our city struggle with what to do. I'd just like to offer a few comments. Number one has to do with the housing and the demographics. I've watched as our leaders have really installed a lot of subsidized housing on the east side of town, and I'm fine living there with those folks, and I think we need to provide that. But what I watched happen is that those folks don't have much money, and the retail just fled. And so we've got to break that cycle of, regardless of what we put on that site, it has to be something that can be supported by the folks who live around it. So if you look at the housing immediately adjacent and around the Eastland Mall property, those are old, old apartments that only attract people who are just getting started, who can't afford much. And so I worry about what we're going to do with the mall area, because it won't break that cycle of making it a destination and attracting better housing options. So I'm eagerly waiting. I love East Charlotte. I would rather move out of the city of Charlotte than live somewhere else. And I could live anywhere I choose, but I choose to stay on the east side for its benefit. I'd like to hear what our leaders are going to do about some of the housing choices they've made and things that they've installed. Public housing is one. And again, I'm glad those folks are there, but they just don't have any money. And the aging population, those folks are out of money as well. And so, anyway, I'll take my questions off of here. Thank you.
Thank you, Charles. Mayor, point there you had made a few minutes ago about subsidized housing, affordable housing, lower rent housing on the east side. Do we need to get rid of it? What do we do?
The city really has control only over subsidized housing, and that means money that comes either from the feds, the state, or the local government. But what we are trying to do is what we're going to is multi-income housing. So developments now, you'll see the Housing Authority, Housing Partnership, they're doing developments that have market rate housing. They have the subsidized housing. So that helps, and that's the trend, and that's what we will be doing going forward.
For new. So, but what about? The city needs also a full range of housing options, and one of the things that that we see sometimes when a city and policymakers get their sights set on a specific quadrant of the city, then we get this gentrification concept where people get priced out of and you no longer have the affordable range in a certain neighborhood, and so they all go somewhere else in the city in order to find places where they can afford to live. So as you're thinking, and Councilman Madeline, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts too, as you're thinking about the future of East Charlotte, do we need to raise the income level? Do we need to get rid of some of these apartment complexes on the edge of Eastland Mall, where the caller is saying they're people that have small incomes?
But it doesn't matter what your income is; you can still be part of a neighborhood. You can still keep your house clean. You can still keep the trash off the street. That is our main concern. I don't care who lives next to me. I don't care what their income is. I don't care if they're subsidized. I've worked years ago with Section 8 trying to get the people in subsidized housing, come on, give a little bit back to the neighborhood, be part of the neighborhood, be inclusive. But no, they wouldn't do it. The landlords, we have a lot of absentee landlords. The main thing is people need to be educated and held accountable to keeping their property up. It doesn't cost any money to take the toys and take them out of the front lawn. It doesn't take any money to pick up the litter around their house. That's the main thing. And I think if we can educate renters or people who have never lived in an area where, it's not a big apartment complex, but it's a duplex, that's what we need. We need more accountability.
If you're just tuning in, that's Diane Langevin of the Winterfield Neighborhood Association. We are talking today on Charlotte Talks about the East Side, where it's been, where it's going. You can join the conversation, Charlotte Talks at WFAE.org. We'll be right back.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and The Book of Mormon, winner of 9 Tony Awards, including Best Musical. From the creators of South Park, The Book of Mormon plays this December at Belk Theater. Tickets go on sale Friday. Details at BlumenthalArts.org. Coming up next in about 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, it's the latest on the Syrian crisis. A panel of experts will join guest host Susan Page to discuss the U.S. and international response to reports of chemical weapons use in Syria. That's the Diane Rehm Show this morning at 10 here on 90.7 WFAE. If you'd like to join our discussion this morning, you can do so by going to WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. Over 75 golfers will play in the Greater Hickory Kia Classic. This Champions Tour event stops at Rock Barn Golf and Spa in Conover, October 14th through the 20th. Ticket information is at GreaterHickoryKiaClassic.com. WFAE is pleased to be a community partner.
Welcome back. This is Charlotte Talks on WFAE. I'm Julie Rose, sitting in for Mike Collins. What's the next chapter for Charlotte's East Side? And who should write that chapter? We have with us today Mayor Patsy Kinsey, Councilman Billy Madelon, Diane Langevin of the Winterfield Neighborhood Association over there, right kitty corner to Eastland Mall, and Noah Mizgani, who runs a restaurant, an Ethiopian restaurant, Queen Sheba Ethiopian restaurant on the East Side. Just before the break, Councilman Madelon, we were talking about this, the notion of a lot of renters and low rent apartments on the East Side, and whether or not we need to get rid of them in order to change things on the East Side. Is that what we need to do, sort of tear down and build up some nicer new homes over there?
Well, it may be that some things need to go away, but that's sort of a false choice. I mean, I think folks on the East Side see it is a more dynamic decision. It's not either or. We can have both. I think having market rate or above housing is essential on the East Side. There's no question about that. And that's largely going to be driven by market forces and infrastructure. And we, I think, understand how that happens and why it happens. And then that's going to begin to place what I would describe as positive pressures on some of those apartment communities, and then rents begin to go up and so forth. But driving people out into other parts of the city, I think the caller was right on. We're lucky to have those people share our communities with us and live next door to us. It's a function of how do we drive more of what we don't have enough of and not drive other stuff away. There's plenty of room in East Charlotte for growth and development. East Charlotte is not fully built or developed by any stretch of the imagination.
So the streetcar has been mentioned as a possibility that at some point the vision would be to have a streetcar running east to west from practically out to the airport, all the way across, all the way out to where Eastland Mall is. That's many, many, many years away if it happens. But is a streetcar – I mean, you have these people who come and they live – on the East Side, in a lot of cases, maybe they're young. They don't have. I think Diane, you even mentioned this to me once. You have these young homeowners. They come. They maybe even buy a home. They invest in it. They really like it. But then they have children, and they are suddenly less concerned about being able to take a streetcar uptown, as they are about where my kid's going to go to school and where the best school is. And is that something you can offer right now? I mean, the East Side schools are not as good as the schools in South Charlotte.
Well, let's be careful. I mean, the East, when you say they're not as good, we've got some wonderful schools in East Charlotte.
Performance.
You're talking about
from a performance perspective.
But that's largely driven by socioeconomics and other issues. So it's not the quality of the teachers. It's not the quality of the infrastructure. It's not the location of the school. Look, our schools, let's be frank here. Our schools are segregated again. We've made some terrible decisions in this community. The community is going to have to come to grips with the realities of the fact that we have, quote unquote, overperforming schools in largely white, largely socioeconomic higher income areas, and our schools underperform, quote unquote, in areas where incomes are lower and where people are more ethnically diverse. I mean, I think in East Charlotte we have the highest percentage of students that speak English as a second language. I mean, imagine having to teach in a classroom where a quarter or a half of the students don't even speak English as a primary language. Mm-hmm. So we do have challenges. But again, it's not the quality of the schools. It's the product that the schools are working with. So the joke in Plaza Midwood is that you can time a for sale sign in someone's yard by the age of their children.
Mm.
But that's not acceptable to me. You know, it's not. People don't want to leave East Charlotte. They don't want to leave Plaza Midwood. They want to continue to live there, and they want their kids to go to school there. But let's be honest, people will die for their children, and the education of one's children is a primary sort of anthropological concern that parents have. And so schools have to be a part of all of the conversation on the east side, not just the streetcar and other kinds of things. It's also about how do we look at being creative with how we attract the best students from other parts of the city to come to school. By the way, all of those proposals that came out and were looked at as seriously for Eastland Mall, mm-hmm. all of them had an educational component to it. All of them had a school as a component to it. That's not an accident. They all understand that in order for whatever we do there to be successful, there's going to have to be a magnet there, an educational magnet that draws the best and brightest students from all over the city to want to come to East Charlotte to be educated. And ultimately, the hope is that people will also decide to live there and shop there and eat there. Mm-hmm. That's how the cycle begins to work.
So we have talked about the diversity, the changing demographic. I was looking at census data for the East Side, as I mentioned, and the Hispanic community in the last 10 years has doubled.
Yes.
The percentage of people who are Hispanic in East Charlotte has doubled, while the African-American percentage population mm-hmm. has declined. So this truly is. I wouldn't be surprised if it's one of the most concentrated Hispanic communities in Charlotte, and we have as a result, a lot of the commerce that targets and caters to that community. And I have to wonder if all of these members of the Hispanic community who have moved into Charlotte think there's a problem at all. I mean, because it's affordable, because there has been vacant store space, they have been able to open their, you know, and thrive. And then we see the example of the taco carts a couple of years ago,
yeah.
These taco trucks where, you know, they have these trucks that the Hispanic community feels like is serving their need very effectively. And then you have these neighborhoods just off the main corridors saying, no, wait a second, we don't like the way that looks. We don't like what you're attracting to our neighborhood. So are we, in essence, do we risk marginalizing this whole diverse community that we in some ways are kind of happy to have?
Let me mention the taco trucks. The city council did not ban taco trucks. And actually, the neighborhoods didn't worry about them being there. It was the hours they operated.
But made it more difficult for them to operate in the way that they had traditionally been operating. And many of them have had to go out of business.
They were breaking the law. We always had the 9 o'clock cutoff. And they were breaking the law.
But the point is, it was very difficult to. It was hard to ignore the fact that when you had people speaking at city council meetings mm-hmm. who were concerned about the taco trucks, they were not Hispanic. They were white, and those who said,
absolutely.
Wait, this is meeting our needs, let's change the rules and let them stay open later, which was another option the city had that it did not choose. It was the Hispanics who were saying that. So I'm bringing up that as an example of you have, you know, a new community over there, a diverse demographics, and who's to say that there are problems? I mean,
well, there are, and there are always going to be challenges when change occurs, right? You have cultures and communities that are bumping into each other, and we're learning to live together. We have an exploding Asian and African mm-hmm. population in East Charlotte, and I've even seen stories about problems with neighbors who raise chickens and goats and other kinds of mm-hmm. animals
yeah.
that are allowed
we
inside
can't make
of code.
A, we can't make. We have to have one set of laws and ordinances. We can't just, in my opinion, let one group do their thing and another group do their thing, because
But is it a place where, do you worry, Noah, as an Ethiopian restaurant owner, that some of these changes then make it more too expensive for you to operate over there, and eventually it's chain restaurants in East Charlotte because it's come up and people have, you know, it's the hip new place to be, and they don't want all, it's no longer affordable for restaurants like yours?
Well, I don't know what the change is going to look like, but so far the Hispanic community are contributing to the area. I mean, largely. I mean, they are mm-hmm. hiring people, you know. building restaurants, mm-hmm. you know, those things should be appreciated, you know. It shouldn't be, I mean, the city has to give them incentive to do more instead of, I mean, just fearing those people will be dominating the area, all those kind of things.
So are they at the table, I guess, is the question.
We're trying. This is where we're having.
And this is Diane Langevin from the Winterfield
a
neighborhood.
Problem. We're trying to really incorporate Latinos into our neighborhood association. So we rebranded ourselves as a Winterfield community. And we're finding out that we can get to the Latino parents through their children. We have an orchestra at the school. We have a community garden. And this is where the kids are very active and the parents are coming in. We have translators that come to our meetings. We're very fortunate to have one of our police officers who is speaks Spanish. Our communities and school person speaks Spanish. So we're trying to get the Latino families more involved. And that is difficult because of their culture, mm-hmm. Because of some of their distrust in the police. So now we meet at the school. So that is our issue, is getting the Latinos active in our neighborhood. So we're branding out. We're trying to get more businesses. But right now, let's work on getting the Latinos. They will live in our neighborhood. Let them be part of our neighborhood. We want them all inclusive. And then we're going to expand out and try to get more businesses more inclusive in our neighborhood.
But it's also a popular misconception that Hispanic families are less concerned about their children's education than Caucasian or African Americans. That is not true. I have gone to many schools, high school, middle school, elementary. The Hispanic parents are concerned about their children's safety and their education. The challenge that we're running into is, as Diane pointed out, some of it's cultural, but a lot of it is a language barrier. I mean, we just have children that are first-generation Americans, if you will. Their parents may not speak good English, and that creates a challenge in the school place. Now, we're going to get past that as a community because we have to, but the Hispanic community, the African communities, the communities, the Asian communities, they are all making significant mm-hmm. contributions on the east side. And whatever headwinds those communities are creating are all a byproduct of change and evolution. And I think ultimately they're going to be the bedrock in which we bury the victory flag for East Charlotte. We're going to have to win because of our ethnicity and our diversity and all of the many wonderful things that are happening in East Charlotte. Because let's remember, in about 50 years, Charlotte's going to look like East Charlotte. All East Charlotte is a metaphor right now for what's going to happen to all of our community. There's no running from it. Charlotte is going to be a community of many colors and many cultures. It's just starting in East Charlotte, but it's going to go everywhere in our future.
Let's go ahead and take a call from – we have Victoria on the line. She's a Hispanic business owner in Charlotte. Victoria, hi. Welcome to Charlotte Talks.
Hi, good morning. I'm an attorney here in Charlotte, and I'm on the east side, and I'm Hispanic-American, and I just feel we need a lot of investment on this side. It's a side of the city that has been ignored, I think, neglected, and without the city's investment, it's not going to grow. There's many second-generation Hispanics that, you know, we speak perfect English, perfect Spanish, and we just feel that this, you know, obviously I feel safe where I work. I feel safe in this community. And unfortunately, there's a perception that because you're Hispanic or Black, you're dangerous. And that's not the case. This side of town does have many restaurants, Vietnamese, any kind of food that you want to eat internationally, it's on this side of town. And again, I say, you know, people are afraid maybe to come here because they're ignorant to our culture, to our society. And without the city investing in our infrastructure, it's not going to go anywhere.
So what investment, Victoria, do you want? What are you speaking of specifically?
Well, with Eastland Mall, something has to be done. It's an eyesore. There's lots of land that has been abandoned, even just, you know, trees that can be planted or taken care of. Anything like that. We need, you know, they're talking about putting the rail cars up. I mean, that's something that this side of town, if you build things like that, we're going to have more wealthy people maybe move into the community. I'm not saying push anyone out because that would be ridiculous, but more investment in this area by business owners, by you know, anyone that has some wealth that can be distributed in this side of town.
Thank you. Thank you, Victoria, for your call. I appreciate it. Let's keep your headphones on. Let's take one more call while we're at it. We've got Tana has been holding on the line for a bit. Tana, welcome to Charlotte Talks.
Thank you.
What's your comment?
Well, my daughter lives in the community, and she's in the film industry. And I would see a big influx of young professionals to the area if Eastland Mall becomes a part of the film industry.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thanks for your call. So two comments there regarding investment from the city. We had someone tweet earlier, you know, what's the big picture? Where can I go to see the big picture for the east side of Charlotte? The two big things we've heard talk about are whether or not Eastland Mall should be, that whole property should be developed into sort of a movie studio, retail, film school complex, and whether or not we should eventually spend, how much money we should spend on a streetcar. But Mayor, what... I guess you've been doing this for many, many, many years. What is the big picture for the East Side, and where can people go to see the vision?
Well, I suppose they'd go to charmec.org and go to planning. There should be something there, particularly about the Eastland Mall situation. But let me say the city has invested a lot of money in infrastructure for the East Side. It's been over a period of years. We are continuing to do that with Eastland Mall project. I just have to caution again that whatever is done at Eastland has to be sustainable. And it will take a long time to build it out. But now's the time to get started if we possibly can.
And so. Councilman Madeline, you are also the chairman of the Eastland Area Strategies Team. We just have about 30 seconds here. But does your organization, it's an advocacy group, do you have a vision for the East Side that you're promoting specifically, or...
Well, our vision is that Charlotte begins here, and it begins on the east side. The sun rises in the east, and we have been largely committed to helping businesses come to East Charlotte and be successful because we believe that that's where it starts. We already know we have great neighborhoods and communities. They don't need our help. We need great businesses to partner with those communities, and I'd like to talk a little bit more about infrastructure and the streetcar when we have an opportunity because I think that's a key part of a bigger puzzle. When people say, where do I see the bigger picture? I'm not sure I know where it is, but I can tell you what contributes to it.
Charlotte East is also responsible for Taste of the World. Queen Sheba Restaurant, Ethiopian restaurant, is a part of that coming up in October. My thanks to all of our guests this morning on Charlotte Talks, 90.7 WFAE.